Yeah, I know. I'm in trouble again. You're probably watching that video and you're maybe thinking, that's not exactly appropriate for church. Trust me. I debated several times about using something a little kinder, gentler, tamer. But then God just kind of kept after me. He's kind of like, this is where I want you to start. So then I thought, I'm a very good video editor. I've got great video editing skills. I could soften it up. I could remove the demon child. I could take out a word here and there and make it a little more appropriate. Enter that pesky spirit again. What are you doing? You keep saying you want your sermons to be more relevant, but here you are trying to sanitize them and make them churchy. When the fact is, compared to real life and real families made of real people that are struggling with real issues, that video, it has not even scratched the surface of what a meltdown moment looks like. So with that being said, happy Father's Day. Robert Parr is, well, he's reached his end. Bob is supposed to be a hero, and he saved cats from trees and helped little old ladies and captured bank robbers and even defeated supervillains and their robots. But it's not going so well now. He is incredibly physically strong. He's leveled buildings and bench-pressed trains and smashed and even thrown cars, including his own. But to all of his heroics, our good friend Bob is, no other way to put it, he's getting his butt kicked by his new role, fatherhood. Do you see the looks on those kids' faces when he snapped? They're horrified. Can you believe it? I mean, here is their dad, and he's supposed to be the hero of their life. And now all of a sudden, it's all falling apart. And maybe we want to take out the label of making machine and label Bob Parr a bad dad. And if you've been following this series either online or you've hung in here for the sermons, and you now know that I have been picking these clips that we've been using from the Incredibles movies very carefully, and with the exception of Mother's Day, if you've been paying attention, they have all been about Bob. I mean, across all of it, Bob has been pictured as this bad dad, because remember in week one, it was Bob that was almost late for his own wedding while he was trying to do one more thing. Then we took week two off. That was Mother's Day. And then we went to week three, and it was Bob that made the bad decisions to try to relive his glory days. And then we went to week four, and it was Bob that was pictured as the disinterested and distracted dad. And then we had our children's week, so Bob got a break. And then we came back in week six, and it was Bob that was unable to give his kids that good advice sitting at the dinner table. And then we went to last week, and although I didn't use the clip because we were supposed to be inside out, but the villain Bob was fighting was from Bob's past life. So Bob created his own villain by the way he treated people in the past. And here we are at week eight, and well, Bob is cracking up under the pressure of being a dad. And all of a sudden, he doesn't look much like a hero to us anymore. He doesn't look very incredible. And this is a really good teaching moment for the men that are sitting here in the pews today and those that are listening online or those that will be watching this later. Guys, it's not all on you, but your family will only be as solid as you are committed to them. Moms are as incredible as they are not designed to do it alone. They can only stretch so far. And yeah, your family, they are counting on you. And you know what? B being a dad, I can tell you, that's a whole lot of pressure. There are very many nights when you lay in the bed and you stare at the ceiling like, how am I going to fix this problem? How am I going to do that? After all, I'm managing the relationships, and I'm trying to keep the kids from becoming demon children. I'm doing all this, and oh my gosh, the pressure is so much. And you know, how about we go to the Bible and let's learn how dads did it? And here's the problem. When I go look for moms, I can find lots of great role models for mom. I can go talk about Hannah or Naomi or Ruth or Mary, and that's just a few. There are a lot of great moms. But when I go looking for the dads, I'm missing some role models. Think about this for a second. I could go back to Adam. He had a lot of kids. But wasn't it Adam's decision that kind of put us where we are today? And Adam had two sons to start off with. And well, one killed the other. I don't think that's a good dad to use. I know Noah. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And then he got off the ark and planted a vineyard and got drunk and cursed his own son. Now, I don't think Noah's a good idea. How about Lot? After all, 2 Peter calls him a righteous man, but isn't this the same guy that offered his teenage daughters up for sexual favors? Yeah, no, that's not a good idea. How about Abraham? He was the father of a nation. Yeah, but his inability to wait on God led him to having a son that he later disowned, so he's 50-50 at best. Isaac, well, he got deceived by his son Jacob, and well, Jacob created such favoritism in his family that his sons contemplated murdering their younger brother, and then when they decided not to murder him, they sold him into slavery to make a buck. That doesn't sound like a good idea to preach. How about Eli? He's a preacher. He's a religious man. Yeah, and he was so absorbed in ministry that his two sons that he raised, nobody wanted anything to do with them. How about Samuel? I love Samuel. He was a great prophet, but his sons were so horrendous that it forced Israel to ask for a king instead of letting them become the next judges of Israel. Speaking of kings, how about the man after God's own heart? There's a dad for you. Have you read David's family story? It's a grease fire, folks. How about Solomon? He's really, really wise, giving us lots of good advice on family. But to his own admission, Solomon lived as a fool. And his son, well, he's actually one of the ones that instigated the very division of God's own nation. Guys, it's no wonder we can't figure out how to be a good dad. We got nobody to mimic. I mean, they're all messed up. And in one side of it, I feel kind of good because I'm kind of like, you know what? If they can't get it right and they're God's heroes, what chance do I have? So I can just kind of use that as my excuse. But then I went a digging. There has to be one, right? I mean, I could use God himself. He is the ultimate father, but I'm looking for a human, somebody I can relate to because I'm not God. And well, after some digging and some praying and some more digging, believe it or not, I unearthed one really great example of what does it mean to be an incredible man and an incredible dad at the same time. And you're never going to believe where we found him. How about you turn to the book of Job with me? This is what it reads in Job chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. All right, that makes him incredible right there. 10 kids. Matt's got this look like, no, I don't think so. 10 kids. He owned 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yokes of oxen and 500 donkeys and had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. Now, here is what I need you to see first and foremost, men and even ladies who have to support us men who sometimes don't have a clue. When it comes to Job, he was just a man. He wasn't a superhero. He never worked a miracle. He had no superpowers. He didn't have an alter ego or a mask. He didn't have a spandex suit that he changed into when he ran into a phone booth. He was just an ordinary guy living an ordinary life in an extraordinary way. And now I am curious. How does just a man do that? Well, we need to understand he was just a man, but he was an incredibly blessed man. It said he had 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 donkeys and had a number of servants. So he had a lot of possessions, and maybe you're wondering, why is that important to the story? Well, because we too are very blessed people. Maybe we're not as blessed as financially as Mr. Job was. But we also know that with shekels come shackles. Jesus tells us in Luke chapter 12, verse 18, then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. There I will store my surplus grain. And so as men, when we get a lot of stuff, we tend to start looking for places to store our stuff, right? I mean, we have buildings out there now that you rent that is just to store my stuff. I don't live in it. I just put my stuff there. Why? Because my stuff is important. And you know what? Sometimes my stuff becomes my distraction from my family. And this is why I marvel at Job, because he had all this stuff. But somehow, he managed to keep his brain focused on his family. And maybe you never realized this, but he was an incredibly good man. It says that he was upright and blameless. So just know, he wasn't a perfect man, all right? I'm sure if we took some time and we hired some private investigators and built a time machine and went back in time and we had them dig around in Job's closet for a little while, we probably would find some skeletons. You think Job ever had a meltdown moment? We'll talk about that. But they say he's an incredibly good man, that he was blameless and he was righteous. And you know what the other thing is? He was an incredibly committed married man. Now, it doesn't talk about Job's wife here, but I'd like you to listen to Job's opinion of his wife in Job chapter 31, verse 1. I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a young woman. That's important. Because he doesn't just commit to, hey, look, I'm not going to have sex with other women. I'm going to be in a monogamous relationship. He says, hey, I'm going to take my eyes and I am going to focus them on my wife and block the rest of the world out. And you know, this is one of those great teachable moments, because guess what? Incredible families are built on incredible marriages, not the other way around. If the marriage is unstable at the beginning, go ahead, add some kids to it, and it's like pouring gas on a fire. You have to start here. The focus begins, where did we start our sermon series? All the way back at the wedding altar. It's interesting they call it a wedding altar, because something does get sacrificed there. Your individuality, and Job understood this, and he says, hey, look, I'm not even going to shop. I'm not going to look around to see if there's something better. I'm going to stick right here. And even when his wife is dealing with all of the grief and she tells Job to curse God and die, Job said, you know what? She's my wife. And this doesn't work without that. And so I find that interesting. He was incredibly committed to his marriage. And you know what? He was incredibly respected in his community. It says that he was the greatest man of all the people in the East. In short, he had a great testimony amongst his community. People, when you say Job, they had nothing but nice things to say about Job. He's a good businessman. He's a fair businessman. He drives a hard bargain. Even his servants have good things to say for them. He's a great boss. He's got that going for him. And you know what? On top of all of that, he is an incredibly godly man. It says he feared God and shunned evil. Now, I think this is interesting because Job's faith is not something he taught his kids. Job's faith is something he demonstrated to them. He never sat them down and said, now here are the rules, follow them. No, he said, hey, here are the rules, you watch me live them, and you just follow me. That's a huge difference. That's incredible that we think that way. That's remarkable that he takes that kind of approach to it. And you know what? In all of this, as far as a great man he was, guess what? He was an incredible dad. Again, 7 sons, 3 daughters. And I know what you're about to tell me. Well, that's not fair because Job's kids died near the beginning of his story. Not so fast. It wasn't the beginning of Job's story. It was the beginning of Job's trial. You see, look at 1 Job chapter 4, chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. This is Job's family situation. Just listen to this. His sons used to hold feasts in their homes on their birthdays, and they would invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. When a period of feasting had run its course, Job would make arrangements for them to be purified. Early in the morning, he would sacrifice a burnt offering for each of them, thinking, perhaps my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. This was Job's regular custom. Now, here's what you need to see. In this story, Job's kids, they're all grown up. How do I know? Because they're in their own homes. So you do understand that means when Job lost his kids all in one day, it might have meant he lost his kids and his grandkids, and he lost some daughters-in-laws. And so when all of Job's life came collapsing down around him, he lost all of these kids, but his kids were grown. So somehow we got to this point in Job's life, and he's got grown children that are, well, he loves. He obviously loved his children. He kept involved in their life. Even when they were grown and they had their own families, there was Job, old man Job, and they say, well, let me teach you some more lessons. He didn't just get them to a certain age and pat them on the head and say, go in peace and have a nice life. He was still involved in their life all the way through it. And, you know, I found this the most interesting part. His adult kids are all still speaking to each other. Now, that's an incredible accomplishment. He's got 7 sons and 3 daughters, and every time they have a birthday, they're inviting each other over to their houses, and they're celebrating their lives together. So somehow, Job managed to get 10 adult children that are all still speaking to each other. Tell you what. Wouldn't you like to take that if you just had 2 kids and you get them to still speak to each other when they're adults? Job had done something in his family that ingrained family life into his kids. And I find that very interesting. And that makes Job incredibly great at being a dad. But you know what? He wasn't just committed to making sure they were happy. Oh, no. He was concerned about his kids' spiritual condition. Now, remember, this isn't Job giving some speech. This is Job thinking to himself, and he said, you know, my kids have been partying at their house. And, yeah, they don't always listen to do things the way that I do them. And, you know, perhaps, maybe, during the party, one of them sinned. And it says, Job sat there and he pondered these thoughts. So even after they were grown and they were out living in their own homes and they were out having their own parties, Job didn't interfere and say, now you shouldn't do that. Okay, he probably gave them some advice beforehand. But here's the thing, what makes Job incredible is he never stopped them from living their life, but he never let them live it without an understanding that God is near. Even when they're adults, you can go live your life, but you know what? Understand, when it comes to me and my house, God is still going to be near. And Job sat around concerning himself with his kids, even when they were grown adults, about whether or not there was sin in their life. And you know what the funny thing is? Again, he's dealing with grown kids here. He was still the spiritual leader of his family. This is what it says. Job would make arrangements for them. Now, understand what this probably means. This means that when the party is all done and they're cleaning up all the decorations and they're maybe throwing away a few things they don't want Dad to see and all of this, and Job comes a knocking on the door, the kids know it's coming. I mean, here's Dad, and like, oh yeah, we had a party. Yeah, we got some things that Dad's going to make us go talk to God about. That's incredible. That's important. He didn't just let them go wandering off into the dark. It says he came a knocking on their door and he made the arrangements for them. And what was he planning on doing? To purify them. And I love this. Early in the morning. So you know what? They were like, yeah, we were partying all night. Here comes Dad. 7 o'clock in the morning. Get out the bed. We have some God things we have to go take care of. That's impressive. I don't know how many of us would be brave enough to do that. Or have enough time to do that. Or even think it's important enough. They're grown. But it says he would sacrifice a burnt offering for each of them. So again, he'd bring his kids and he'd bring them to the altar. And he was taking cattle from his own livestock and bringing it. Okay, let's talk about confession, son. What you got? And as he confessed his sin, they would burn an offering. Then he'd bring the next son, and he'd bring another cow up there, and they'd confess the sin. And he'd bring the daughter up there, and notice he's treating the daughters and the sons equally. This is revolutionary here, folks, for biblical times. But the daughter comes. What you got, honey? Okay. He's not judging them, though, is he? I don't see a sermon here. What's he doing? He's letting them deal with God, not with him. And guys, this is important because guess what? This is not mom. Not her job. And you know what? This is not grandma and grandpa's job. And you know what? This is not the preacher in the church's job. And you know what? It's not some community organization. It's not their job either. And you know what? It's not up to the school. And you know what? It's not up to the government. You know what? It's your responsibility. And I love what it says about Job. It says it was his regular custom. So this was not some one-time event where Job woke up in the middle of the night and he was all sweaty and all worried. He's like, I better do something or God's going to strike my kids dead. This was a regular custom. So you do understand what that means, right? That means when the kids start planning the party, then they are thinking, okay, when the party is over, we know Dad is coming, and this is not an option. Dad's coming, and Dad's going to expect us to be willing to get back in front of God. He's going to let me live my life, but he's going to make sure I understand God has to be part of my life on a regular basis. Now, that would go a long way in our family sometimes, guys. I mean, let's face it, we are crisis mode people, men. Whatever is the biggest fire burning, that's the one we're going to try to put out. And here's the thing. Our kids learn this very early. So you know what our kids learn how to do? Not start fires, we'll see. So they have their own little life going, and yeah, it's got fires, but they make sure they keep it a secret from Dad because we're reactive. Job is not reactive. This is a planned thing. It's part of the celebration. Fine, kids, you want to have a party? Party away. Next day, join me at the altar because we have some sacrificing to do. Guys, how's your family as far as your spiritual leader goes? Are you regularly getting in touch with your kids to say, how's your spiritual life? Not how's your day, not how's your batting average, not how's your run time. Now, how did work go? Do we? on a regular basis sit our kids down and say, how's your relationship with God? How are things going spiritually for you? What are you struggling with? What do you got going on in your life that you just think is too big for God? We don't do that. You know why? Because that's convicting. And you know what? Once they become adults, it becomes even easier to just say, you know what? I raised you and taught you what you were supposed to do. And if you can't figure out how to do it at this point, I can't help you. That isn't what Job thought. The incredible dad was going to be meddling in their life for the rest of their life. Unfortunately, that life didn't quite go as long as Job wanted it to go. Did Job ever have a meltdown moment? You bet. This is what it says in Job chapter 1, verses 18 through 19. We're not even out of the first chapter yet. While he was still speaking, yet another messenger came and said, your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at their oldest brother's house. So you get what's happening. Party's going on. So Job's already got the altar built for the next day to go and do the sacrifice. He's already got the cows picked out. They were at your oldest brother's house, at their oldest brother's house. When suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the desert and struck the four corners of the house. It collapsed on them, and they are dead. And I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. Now, as a parent, I have never experienced this, but as I understand it, one of the hardest things you can ever do is lose a child. It's crushing. As a matter of fact, for families that lose a child and the children are young, believe it or not, when somebody loses a child, 80% of those families end in divorce. Because it's just something that happens when you lose a child. It crushes you. But I can't even wrap my brain around this moment. Here's Job, and he's got all these cows, and he's got all these goods, and he's got all these blessings, and he's got all these kids. And like I said, by this point, he probably has some grandkids, and they're married, and he's out there. And then remember, he had just gotten the news that all of his possessions were gone. Now my kids? My investment plan? Those individuals that I spent so much of my time raising and helping and teaching and hovering, and now all of a sudden, God, they're gone? I couldn't imagine. But I could imagine what I would do, because I know Barry. And when it comes to meltdown moments, Mr. Bob Parr, I could give you a few lessons on what it means to have a meltdown moment. Because I have seen that horrified look in my kid's face before when I have had my meltdown moments. And so I know what I would do. I would have flown off the handle, and me and God would have had a yelling match right there in the middle. What are you thinking, God? You want to know what makes Job incredible? Here's his response. At this, Job got up and tore his robe and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship. Yeah, that wouldn't be on my list. It wouldn't even make the top 10 events that I would be doing on my list. It would probably be months before I'd be willing to get back in God's presence. But here is this man, and he gets this news, and the first thing that enters his mind is go worship God. Wow. And then here's his testimony. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. Are you serious? Not only is he going to worship God, he's going to praise God. Okay, there's something wrong with this man. That's not normal. No, it's not. That, my friends, is incredible. In all of this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Now, did Job have his moments of doubt? Oh, you better believe it. Go read chapter 31. I've got a runny nose. I'm sorry. I'm working my way on it. Go read chapter 31. And Job, yeah, he demands an audience with God. He said, God, me and you, face to face, let's talk about this. God shows up and Job wasn't as interested in talking. But at this point, is Job taking the moment lightly? No. Immediately he enters into a mourning state, that idea of shaving your head, that idea of tearing your robe. He's acknowledging his grief, but in the same vein, he worshiped. He praised. And he didn't blame God for it. And you know what, folks? I don't know about you. That makes him, in my book, Mr. Incredible. And so our challenge today here, men, if you're here today, and ladies, because they're going to need lots of help with this, are you willing to take that challenge? How about it? I mean, after all, I meet qualification number one. I'm just a man. Go look in my closet. I have no super suit. Thank goodness for you. You don't want to see me in spandex. Not a good picture. I have no superpowers, unless you count my big mouth. I don't have anything really great that I can offer. I do kind of meet qualification number two. I'm incredibly blessed. God has taken care of my family in miraculous ways over the years. I'm sure y'all could share stories too. Am I an incredibly good man? That depends on the day of the week. Sometimes on the moment of the day. Am I an incredibly godly man? Depends. Am I incredibly committed to my marriage? I like to think I am, but even in that, we have our struggles. Here's the question. How committed am I to my kids? Am I committed enough to get involved not just in their life? Am I committed enough to be meddling in their spiritual life? To making sure they understand who the person of Jesus is? To make sure they understand who Jesus is in relationship to how he died for them? Now understand, all I can do is give them the information and pray for them and mentor them. Ultimately, they have to make the decision on what they're doing with God. I can't make a decision for anybody except for myself. But I do have a responsibility as a dad and as a man to take that role in my kids' house and not shun it off to my wife, not say, well, we'll learn it at school, not say, well, it's the government's responsibility to pass the right law so that we can do this, not some community. It's my job. And if we're going to be the incredible men of the church and the incredible men of our families, this is where we start. Commit to our wife and then commit to raise godly kids. And as a church, this is important because we just sent a pile of kids down the steps and we need to be committed to raising those kids and helping us support our families in a godly fashion. Helping our men understand, yeah, it's a hard job, but we're going to be here to support you every step of the way. Because you're going to have those moments when you're just trying to keep the child from being a flaming demon child. And you're going to have those moments when, you know what, one more thing is going to break you. And you're going to look at it. And you're going to snap. And that's what the church is for. But when you're broken, you can come here and get fixed. Because we're supposed to be the spiritual mentors to our men.